And welcome to a very special EWTN bookmark with a great friend of ours, Marcus Groda. You all know him, the book guideposts for the journey home. Conversion Stories with Marcus Groda, proudly published by us at EWTN Publishing, available naturally through our EWTN religious catalog. EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. And speaking of all things Catholic, we have Mr. Hello. Convert himself, Marcus Groda,
a
very humble host here on EWTN all these years. Mother Angelica saw it in you, and the rest is history.
Yeah, well, it's a little, I feel a little sheepish being called Mr. Convert, but I never would have dreamed that Mother would have opened, and you too, I mean, you were both involved with opening the door so that I'd have this opportunity to help others tell their stories for all those years.
And of course, people saw you on with Father Mitch talking about the program, even when you first came. What was it? Who was your co-host originally at the time, a guy who came down with you?
On Mother's show?
Yeah, on Mother's show.
Dr. Kenneth Howell.
Right, and at one time you even were talking to kind of doing it somewhat together.
We ventured that in the first year, and Ken would have been great, but it turned out that you guys decided to do it with me, and by God's mercy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who was the first guest?
Tom Howard. Yeah.
We were just talking about Tom Howard before.
And that was so funny, because before that program, see, I run the Coming Home Network, and that's how it got started, right? Coming Home Network.
Right. In fact, the original name of the show was going to be Coming Home.
Well.
And then we kind of said, Mother, we want to have a different name.
On the night before the program, Mother did say, no, don't emphasize the Coming Home Network very much, because people will be confused.
Right.
EWTN Network. Okay. I said, I won't do that. So I began the program, Welcome to the Coming Home Network. I mean, I totally blew it.
Right. We had changed changed the idea of having it as a Journey Home show.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking. Do you have any idea how many shows you've done?
Since I think we average at least 40 new shows a year starting in 1997.
Well, according to what I've got is 1,070 shows that you did. Your son has done about another 85, so you got about 1,155 between, at least within reason, between the two of you over the years.
And I've heard, this is not for public, this is just between you and me, heard that they have at least 750 potential guests on a list.
Is that what it is now?
That's what I've heard.
Well, that's interesting, too, because, you know, at the time when the show...
750, is that what I said?
Yeah, 750. When the show premiered in September of...
97.
When we had that, you know, the focus, clearly, you had Tom Howard and others. A lot of it had to do with a more evangelical kind of thing that was going on, and a fair amount of movement. Would you sense that maybe that movement isn't as great as it was, or has the dynamics of conversion changed in your mind?
I've actually charted that. Mm-hmm. In other words, in our database, all the, for example, clergy converts that we have in our database, which amount to over 1,300, and so when did they convert to the church, and did the graph, and it's very fascinating to see that, yes, there was an increase, and then it really peaked. And it almost peaked around 2010, and then it's come down. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that it parallels, if you will, the charismatic renewal, even the Marian stuff. Remember how many?
Yeah, sure. Used conferences to be and all the things
going on. A conference every weekend somewhere. Well, what's happened? We've gone through this, if you will, a malaise. And, you know, we could sit and talk about what's caused that.
Right.
I don't really know, but I think we're back to a time where we've got to work a little harder.
Right.
At sharing the gospel.
Well, let me ask you this, too, because I have the privilege of working with Father Spitzer on his show, Father Spitzer Universe, where a lot of the focus in conversion is really dealing with young people, agnostics, atheism, really dealing with, and you were a scientist and met yourself in training, the idea of just dealing with the whole idea of God, the existence of God, not so much a biblical God versus a Catholic biblical God, but whether God makes sense at all.
Whether there's a creator.
Right.
And if there's a creator, then does any of this have any...
And does he care about us?
Yeah. And I mean, when I was in engineering school, I went through about 3 years of scientific materialism and was caught up in that group. And it wasn't until I was studying to be a doctor and started studying the evolution of the eye that I realized this is absolutely absurd. Mm-hmm. in the midst of that, and it, and by God's grace, it helped me see there's got to be a creator here. And in some ways, and I agree with Father Spitzer, who's brilliant, that we should be fighting those battles, but in the end, we know it's grace. You can give all the intellectual arguments you can, and they can help, but until that God in his mercy flips that switch somehow, and then there's that grace, and as Newman would say, we hope the person doesn't lose that moment of grace, because it's not like God forces anybody, but he can open up grace, and then now it's our job to help that person accept that grace and respond to it.
Right. Do you walk through the door when it opens?
Yeah, yeah, it's there. We don't know how often, I mean, we don't want to do literal about this, how God opens the door for someone, but our work in the Coming Home Network is recognizing if someone comes to us, we accept that that's grace moving. We do everything we can to open the door to the church for them. We don't force them in, but we make sure they know the fullness of the church.
What's the biggest obstacle you run into now? It used to clearly be Mary. I don't know if that's still the case.
I wish my staff were here. John Mark is really running the show now. This is what I do for a living, is drink a cup of coffee. Right. But I think more and more it is now that we have the media feeding us with so many voices, it's the confusion of that.
Right. Okay.
And one of the issues I think that's become more and more an issue is, does the church, does the Catholic Church change its mind on things? Or, you know, has she, as we've always said, she's taught the same thing for 2,000 years. Well, has she?
Right.
And so now, never before in the history of the church has information, historical, theological, doctrinal, scriptural, been so readily available to everyone that it's becoming a confusing mess on that. And especially today, when we, it seems that we're hearing the church change its opinion on things. I'm not saying it is, but it can seem like
Well, there's so much information, so though one can read the readings and understand the history of the church, there's lots of material coming out constantly. There's very few unpublished thoughts that aren't being published coming out of Rome, whoever happens to be saying, or this particular theologian or this particular bishop offering an opinion, which in many ways is just an opinion.
200 years ago, the average Catholic would not be thinking about what is the Pope doing today? What's the Pope saying today? It would not even cross their mind to worry about it. Pope's in Rome. It's kind of like the it's like the priest in Fiddler on the Roof the Tsar.
The Tsar, keep the Tsar far away from me. Right, that was the prayer for the Tsar.
The Pope in Rome, okay. But today, he's in our living room.
Right.
Everywhere you turn, you can hear what he says. If he burps, you know, we know where the Pope did it. So, I mean, that's the world we're living in, and so the devil's using that to divide. Not just divide or separate bread from the church, but Catholics between Catholics.
Right.
I mean, I thought when I was coming into the church, I was entering through these pillars and this great united body.
Right, you talk about that in the book, obviously.
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's like which group and which opinion then? I mean, there are some groups in the church, I want to point a finger, that are as Protestant can be. Because they think the church has gone haywire on this issue. I'm not going that direction. Well, as you also read in the book, remember in the end when Dietrich von Hildebrand says that he had a problem with contraception. And the priest says, but that's what the church teaches. That's what you believe. So he believed it first because for the first time in his life, he said, there was an authority over me.
Right.
Remember Alice saying, that was a big turning point for him. There's an authority over me.
It was a big thing for you, too. It was a big thing for you.
It was a big thing for you, too. Right. But his example was, I trust the church. And then in time, through his studies, he totally understood the church was right.
Well, that's what you see even with Paul VI. If you take Humanae Vitae in the late 60s, and it's the way it was treated, but whether you like it or not, it was prophetically correct in all the downsides that we've experienced.
More so. I don't want to get there, but the craziness that we're going through now that we never would have dreamed back in 1968, the craziness, which is the trajectory of all that. And
what's interesting in this book too is that, as you point out, these episodes are not your usual Journey Home episodes that are chronicled in here. They're mostly what we call the open line First Monday programs in which we invited previous guests to return to spend more time answering live questions. You got Mother Angelica here, a couple of shows, four shows, I think, with Scott Hahn, one with the beloved Benedict Rochelle, which starts things off, and then you've got Alice von Hildebrand talking about her husband, of course.
Yeah.
I thought it was
and
funny.
Steve Mosier, of course.
And Steve Mosier on Population. Right. But I thought it was so funny with Alice because you ask her one question and her answer went on for like two pages. And I said, now that's definitely Alice von Hildebrand.
That was also true a couple times with Scott. I want to express great gratitude to you and to your staff that helped put this book together. I want to tell the audience that I can say without hesitation, this is an excellent book. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is I had very little to do with it. And I say that in the
sense. You just did the interviews that we use.
Yeah, I say that in a sense of, as I reread this book recently to get ready for this, I was taken aback by the collection that was together. And what's powerful about these, and I know you experienced the same thing in your bookmarks, is that these folk, Father Grishel and Mother Angelica and Scott Hahn, when they're on the journey home or the bookmark, they're asked a simple question, and what they're doing is they're taking all that research and everything they have, or Father Spitzer, it's all out there, and now all of a sudden, without a manuscript, they're trying to bring it all in and explain it to the audience they perceive that's out there.
Right.
And so you get all of their theology in a way condensed and simplified. That's all the way through this thing. It's really a powerful aspect of that, and as you said, these were not the usual journey home where it's mainly their conversion story.
Right.
It was a condensation of their conversion story, but they answered so many other questions, which to me make this book extremely valuable.
I'm trying to remember, did you start off on Mondays and go to Fridays, or did you start off on Fridays and go to Mondays?
I started on Fridays.
Okay.
And Raymond was on Mondays.
Right, and then you guys swapped.
And we swapped.
Right, we did a spot.
We did
it. Where he showed up on your set and starts taking things apart, and you had to remind him that it wasn't quite time to move.
That was
a huge
funny.
Spot.
I remember we ought to get that out. It'd be funny to get that out again just for the rip of it. We started on Monday, on Fridays for a couple
years.
That's
why you had an open line first Friday. Kind of was what you originally started with.
Right? And by being there on Fridays enabled me to be here when Mother had her miracle.
Right. Oh, right, okay.
Because I came in Thursday after she had a miracle. That was just a blessed event to be able to be here for that.
Right, absolutely. Well, you say here, I hope that these stories are an encouragement to you. It was one of the great privileges of my life to be able to host this program for 25 years and to meet so many inspirational and inspiring Christian brothers and sisters. Of all the people you met for the first time through the journey home, who were you most inspired by?
That's kind of like why it's hard to answer the question, what was my best guest? Mm-hmm. But still, on the other hand, sometimes I look back on some of those guests, and I remember the first time I had Steve Ray on the program. Mm-hmm. Just blew us away. You know, he had so much enthusiasm.
Yeah, so much knowledge, too.
Knowledge. But, right. I mean, I can go through all the guests. Of course, Tom Howard, and then Graham Leonard was
right.
The second
he was the
guest.
Second week, right?
He was the second. So many.
And he was who? Because he was special.
He was the Bishop of London,
right?
As an Anglican, second to the Queen, in the church, and he converts to the church. So, we've had so many neat folk. I had the privilege to have my wife on the program. That was a great.
Oh, we used to have some programs too where we had multiple people on a particular,
topic,
Presbyterianism,
those were awesome. But I also went, what I meant by that was also there were times I'd come in for the program and I'm looking forward, but then I show up to lunch and I'm sitting like this with Father Thomas Dubé.
Right.
Or Benedict Rochelle or the bishop from Antigonish, Nova Scotia.
This was just
unbelievable.
Yeah, it was.
The gifts you guys
gave
me.
I don't want to say
me.
Magical time, but in some ways, you look back at it now, it's amazing the people who walk through here. And of course, you've got right at the top Father Benedict Rochelle, who says, finally, it took me so long to make the journey home. I said, I know you're the first person I ever saw on EW10, and you talk about tuning in when you were a Presbyterian, not interested in the faith, and kind of wondering what this monk was going to say.
Yeah, I was, as a Presbyterian pastor, flipping through the channels, and then there's this gray monk with the big beard, and I'll be honest, he looked kind of weird to me, and from a Presbyterian perspective. And I'm thinking, what? I'm getting ready to listen, totally snarky. And I'm blown away because he's talking about Jesus. Whoa. And the great privilege again to know him. And of course, recently finished reading his one book on the devotion to Christ, that big tome that he wrote. What an awesome book that is. I miss him a lot.
Yeah, you know? Don't you?
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, I miss him a lot.
Yeah, and I'll go and say the man was a saint. And it's interesting, too, because in the interview you do with him, he talks about the fact that the early church fathers were really important in his own walk in the faith, and they were really important to you, too, weren't they?
They were, because your average non-Catholic kind of knows the scriptures and then jumps to Martin Luther, or you might know St. Francis in there. But when you start reading the early church fathers, and it's funny, sometimes reading church fathers doesn't necessarily make you Catholic, mm-hmm. but as Newman said, it pretty much talks you out of being Protestant.
Because
none of that's there, because you see bishops, you see all of them believed in the real presence of Christ mm-hmm. in you. There's no question there. You see the kernels of Catholicism are there as they open the door, and then mm-hmm. the continual discovery and the reading of that. And of course, Grischel, he was ecumenical from the day one,
absolutely,
wasn't he?
Right, yep.
I mean, that's, to me, was the beauty of him in his love for his Jewish friends as well as Protestant
right.
friends. The Bruderhof folks.
Right, the Bruderhof, they looked after him and looked after Alice von Hildebrand at the end of her life, too.
Yeah, that, I think, had such an impact on his theology, but also trained as a psychologist.
Yeah.
You know, he was no slacker. I mean, his theology was based on a very solid understanding of humanity.
It was interesting, too, because I always remember him saying, people need to understand psychology doesn't fix your problems. It helps you deal with them.
Yeah.
And there's no panacea.
Yeah.
I thought this was interesting, too, because you asked him at one point, what did you think the biggest obstacle was for people becoming Catholic? And he was the example of bad Catholics. Do you think that still holds true?
I think throughout the history of the church. So it's not just because, as we talked earlier about the media making stuff available to us in a way never before, not only is it because, as Scott Hahn would say later in that, the only Catholics he knew growing up were the ones who were better drinkers than him.
And Scott's talk.
So what do? You know, when the only Catholics you know are not living their faith very well. Well, today our problem is that the history of Catholics is now available in a way it wasn't before. So mm-hmm. we can see all the bad popes and the bad everybody throughout history. And how do we do that? So that becomes a real barrier for our separated brethren to say that before they ever have a chance for us to explain the history to help them understand that that we may have been given grace, but everybody's free to respond to it.
Absolutely. The church can be holy, doesn't mean everybody in it is holy. pointed out elsewhere, I'm pretty sure somebody mentioned it, but the old one, I think Mother always said, you know, if our Lord could have Judas among his 12, you know, we could have some bad apples in there. It's just going to happen. That would run about 18%.
The church is holy and struggling with holiness. Right. And as soon as you and I joined, it got a whole lot worse.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Bishop Sheen said to a person who was saying about, I don't want to judge all the problems, people. Well, we got room for one more. You know, another hypocrite. You can kind of come right in. You talk about here. Catholics seem. I thought this was very interesting, and this is something I came to understand, especially coming to work at EW10. In reading books and listening. Catholics, we seem to be much more comfortable with both and, whereas Protestant brothers and sisters get caught up in either or. And he said, yes, it has been said to be a Catholic, you've got to be able to chew gum and walk at the same time.
I love that one. So I remember that in there. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's amazing how, in a way, profound that idea is recognizing this arguments between the either ors has split churches asunder for 2,000 years. But the both and is the dealing with the mystery. The mystery of God's sovereignty yet our total freedom. How do you put those together? Well, if you go with the either or, you get the Calvinists and the Arminians at each other's throat. Or you recognize that, you know, as Augustine, I can't quote him perfectly, but he says, about the moment you think you understand God, you don't. Mm-hmm. There's a mystery there. And we have to leave it as a mystery because he's so obvious statement to say so far above us.
So how daunting was it for you to interview Mother Angelica for the first time?
and you would know this in all your interviews, often your guests for the first 15 seconds are nervous, and then by grace they kind of it was opposite with me and Mother Jill. I can't even, it began, I mean, yeah, right, I'm interviewing Mother. How is she gonna respond to me and all that? But after the first 15 seconds, I felt like we were best friends.
Right, right.
I really did. It was a thoroughly enjoyable time, and I felt in our dialogue back and forth, again, I understand my goal as a host, as you do, and your job is to help that person tell their story. It's about them, it's not about us.
Right, absolutely. And
so here we had a chance to make it Mother.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah, I never get a chance to interview her, at least on a book or anything like that. She said here in a question, she said, you know, the Lord uses ordinary things to do great things. And that was the way she always talked about, I'm the donkey pulling the cart around here. She said, you got to go through certain pains and certain problems, and they may not be great tragedies in your life. Disappointments. God uses a lot of disappointments and things and people. And as we go along, God uses those things to bring us closer to Him. That's what we don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're drawing me back to my favorite scripture, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your... I'm sure she would agree. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He'll direct your paths. That's Mother.
Right.
She trusted Him.
Right.
She acknowledged Him and everything, and just trusted that God's guiding this thing.
Right.
And sometimes I don't understand where that $2 million is going to come from.
Right.
I'm leaving it up to
Him. But she relied on that providence,
right? Yeah,
yeah. She said, we rebel against, you're talking about spiritual challenges and not just religious, they're for every single one of us, meaning not for lay people. She said, we rebel against them because we're always looking at human justice. This isn't right. This isn't right. This isn't right. But as I look back, God was preparing me to go it alone. She's talking about her youth and her growing up and the tough times she had to face.
I mean, think how hard. Here's Mother having to condense for this audience this most difficult time in her growing up, you know? I mean, there was so much there, we'd love to know more what that was like. But for her, by grace, to eventually look at it through the lens of Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to those that love God and are called. I mean, so this stuff, if your heart's right, God's gonna work that right. And that's what happened for her, you know? That. And it took grace turning her heart around because she wasn't starting off in the right direction.
No, not at all. She also said, yeah, it could be if you don't give credit where credit is due to the Lord. She was answering a question you talked about, barrier to Christ. At that point, you can never say, gosh, I did a good job.
Yeah, I think in our interview, we talked about the conversion that happens between boy, am I great, too.
Right.
Thank you, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about that. That's a conversion. When that happens, so that the first thing that comes to your mind is, Lord, that was you. That's a conversion.
Right.
And she was talking about that in her own life.
Right. Well, you realize sometimes that you have these wonderful ideas and you go, how come I have more wonderful ideas now than I used to get? I wonder. She said, God gave us free will. The reason it's free is that I can say yes or no to God, but that doesn't mean I can do as I please, when I please, how I please. It means that He's giving me an opportunity and giving Himself the joy of you loving Him so much that you're more than willing to do something you really don't want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Our separated brethren, God bless them, but they just don't appreciate that aspect of the fiat of Mary, the complete freedom she was given to decide. After God invited her to be the mother of the Messiah, she had the freedom, and she did. I mean, what a model of that. And of course, that's Mother Angelica, and so many things about when it came to this network.
You know, right, and Mother, in the second interview, she was talking about spirituality. Say, every spirituality, there is a cross.
Yeah, yeah, accepting the cross. And I remember that about her healing. She wasn't praying for healing.
Right.
She accepted that cross. She wasn't asking for it, she was accepting that cross.
Right, in many ways, she always, in a lot of ways, felt more comfortable with that cross because it forced her to rely on God.
Yeah.
That when things were getting easier, that's when the temptation for not relying on God and thinking you can do it on your own was the greatest for her.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably for all of us, really.
And we don't know the workings upstairs in God, but the fact that she was totally willing to accept that might have been one of the reasons that he said, okay, I'll let you walk again. You know, the mercy of that. But yet her willingness to be able, I mean, how many times I look back in the days when I was a pastor and I'd have a young person come in and you know, they're bemoaning the fact that they can't find the person they want to marry and when's it going to happen, how do I do it and all this. It almost took them to accept their singleness before God dropped the right person in their lap. Within a month, you know, they're almost getting married. I mean, they had to accept their singleness first, and that was accepting the cross.
And just before we go, you know, you have four different interviews, obviously, with Scott Hahn, who you knew a long time before you. The first interview here was in 98, but you knew him almost 18 years earlier, right?
We were seminary classmates, and he and Kimberly and I were, beginning in 1980 is when I really met them the first time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, yeah.
And then when you got back involved and the Coming Home Network, was that more like in the late 80s, early 90s?
93, we started the Coming Home Network. Okay. I came into the church in 92. They came into the church, and he came in 96. She came in 90. And, you know, the idea was, when we were Protestants, we'd never heard about Protestant ministry becoming Catholic. And then when the door, all of a sudden,
right.
We start to see these clergy all over the place, and that was the reason for
starting. It's funny because you talk in the he talks in the book about the fact that when that was recorded, he said he was giving a casual talk in front of about 35 people, and that tape got to be a million plus. So many people heard that,
he had
impacted
no idea
so many
that it
people.
That would have such an impact.
Right. So absolutely, just like we had no idea in 1997 what an impact you and the Journey Home show, and the Coming Home Network would do as
right.
well. It's
right,
always great
friend.
To see you, my friend.
Thanks, Doug.
Stay
Thank
well.
You.
The one and only Marcus Grodi, the book, Guideposts for the Journey Home and Conversion Stories with Marcus Grodi. You got Mother Angelica and so many other great stories in there, Father Benedict Groeschel. And it's EWTN Publishing. It's available through our EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. You'll love this book. Check it out. Check us out next time right here on Bookmark. See you then.